Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet that has the balls to say that the Xbox One has some problems. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today we're talking games, specifically gaming generations, and how a new one is upon us. Yes, the Xbox One has been released, so we can finally say our goodbyes to the past generation. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
Weird couple of weeks. Very weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of personal flare-ups happening in your life. I'm not sure if you want to go into it on the air, so I'll leave that up to you.
I don't know. Should I? I mean, does it really matter?
Well, it's yours to divulge or not divulge if you...
It's my story!
Exactly.
Not to start off on the wrong foot here, but a week ago my dad died.
Yeah. So for about a week, he died about 2 weeks ago, and there's not a lot of we can say about your relationship with your dad. He wasn't really in the picture very much, but it was still that kind of, I don't know. You're expected to be sad when you can, but what can you say about him, right?
Well, here's the thing, is that I find that there's a lot of people that I know, because people on my Facebook kind of came out of the woodwork and started sharing stories and stuff like that, where you kind of grow to know people a lot better after they're gone. So even though I didn't really know my dad as well as, say, you know your dad, or anyone we know who still has their dad in the picture knows their dad. I'm finding that through dismantling a man's life, I'm learning so much about him that I didn't know. Like, now I know where my hardcore nerd sense comes from. I know where my gadget love comes from. I know where my love of tinkering with things and working on cars. Like, it all comes from him. And today, as I was continuing the process of dismantling this man's life, I found a Sega Master System with a copy of Altered Beast and Afterburner.
Complete with zapper, joystick. The only thing missing was the AV cable, you said?
The only thing missing the AV cable, but every single box, every Master System box that I found with a game in it, also has the original paperwork. So he was meticulous. Like, I found this thing in an unmarked box, like the Ark of the fucking Covenant. And I crack it open, thinking like, oh god, it's going to be more Christmas stuff.
But that's not the weirdest thing to come out of your father's home, was it? No. Tell everyone at home, what was the first thing you found? What was the first weird thing you found from your father's home?
And this is keeping in mind that this was a man who had a lot of stuff. Go into his basement, and I'm looking at all the things that he was just keeping out in the open, not digging through anything yet. And Odyssey 2 still in the box.
An Odyssey fucking 2.
Unreal. Like, he has an Odyssey 2 still in the box. He had Atari flashbacks and whatever, you know, things that you can get from Toys R Us. So even towards his older age, he still had this love of gaming that I never really knew about. But he had, like, old Tandy brand gaming systems.
Like Tandy computer?
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm finding, like, the man was hardcore Tandy brand.
I don't know if you could say hardcore and Tandy in the same sentence.
Once upon a time, you could. Once upon a time, you could say that you could be like fucking fuck IBM, man. Tandy. Life.
I just, like, the name, Tandy. I mean, like, when you say Tandy, it just springs to mind not so much the, in my mind at least, it doesn't spring to mind like gaming system. It sounds like a My Little Pony.
Or
Tandy,
like,
hooves.
Or like a candy brand or something.
Exactly. But, so, like, hardcore and Tandy do not go together. I'm sorry.
But he was. He was this hardcore, super devout Tandy man.
The Tandy man can. The Tandy man can. Yes, the Tandy man can. I better not sing any more bars or else I'm going to get sued for royalties.
Oh, my God. Because they used to, before, you know, it was the Shack. Before Radio Shack became the Shack, Radio Shack was just Tandy brand. So, Yeah, he has like old Tandy computers, like computer systems and game systems and old like just games you've never freaking heard of. And he was meticulous about taking care of this stuff. So now I've inherited this man's weird ass game collection.
Emphasis on weird. I mean, like, I would half expect you to pull out from like the basement like an F channel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that doesn't sound like it'd be out of this man's ballpark, really.
The things that you find in this place, I mean, I'm finding just relics and things that I can use on the car and electronics that you haven't seen in forever. And it's really helping me know the man that I never knew growing up. So that's cool. And throughout all of that, just to kind of right the ship, we've been working our balls off on December, because we got a lot to fucking do in December. And you'll also notice that BendTheSage.com is skinned to support Project Sen by Cake Machine Games.
Ah, no. Actually, we got contacted by, I forgot her name. It's on the tip of my tongue, but we got contacted by her offering thanks for like putting the bumpers and the latest GoalGo video and skinning the website and our Twitter profiles to support this very worthy game. And if you can spare any money to make this game a reality, go to its Kickstarter page. You can find the links on either side of the webpage.
Yeah, just click, at the just time click of this on broadcast. The
body. Just click on the body. You'll be directed directly to the Kickstarter page. And let's make this happen, people.
And I'm not really soliciting or trying to turn the website into a shill. It just kind of, there's something about the art style that I find really cool, and I think it's really bold that they're going with a chunky protagonist and chunky characters at all. Like,
let's be fair, she's not chunky. She's solidly built. I mean, she's built. You know, I've said the term before, and I think the term bears repeating. She is a Valkyrie bitch.
Yeah, and I dig it. I dig it a lot. And I guess it's just like psychosis that made me want to. It just came to me at the right time where it's like, my dad said, ooh, look at this game. So, yeah, if you can just support Project Sen, I'd like to see it happen.
And me too. That's why it's we're spreading the word on this. And just so we can clear the air about this, and in the interest of transparency, no, they are not providing me with any sort of payment or any sort of favor for broadcasting this. This is just trying to get this what I feel is a game that should be played. Happen.
Yeah, though I would hope that for all the fucking work that I put in, if I were to say something like, hey, why don't you make Bennett one of the civilians so he doesn't have to pay $2,000 to be one, that they would do it. So when you're on the hub world, you run by and it's like, oh, look, it's Bennett, flat cap and everything. Nice to know they have flat caps in the future.
Oh, come on, the blonde has one. Why can't I?
That's a beret, though.
Okay. What is the difference between a beret and a flat cap, really?
A beret is not asymmetrical.
That's really the only difference. Actually, I got an email from a Frenchman about a week ago telling me he was proud that I was continuing the beret tradition. It's a flat cap, man. It's not a beret.
Look, just let him have it. Because you're the one that just said, like, well, really, what's the difference? Because I just had to tell you the difference. Don't be mean.
Yeah, I know. I was being facetious. God damn it.
Now that guy's going to cry into his baguette. It's going to be all soggy.
Like an escargot. And he's eating right near the Leaning Tower of Pisa, which is Italy, not France. Fuck you. I'm trying to be extemporaneous on this bitch. Let's just go to the topic at hand before we embarrass ourselves. Well, embarrassing me, actually. I guess what spurned this podcast was actually Sage Reviews ending. And it's just by coincidence not really coincidence, that I ended Sage Reviews or posted the Sage Reviews goodbye video during the week of the Xbox One being released. It was a hard decision to do. It really was. Even though I kind of made up my mind about it a few months ago, there was always these chances of games that I was really looking forward to, and I would have loved talking about it on Sage Reviews, came down the pipeline. Like, I played Grand Theft Auto V, loved Grand Theft Auto V. By the way, if you were waiting on my opinion about Grand Theft Auto V, by the way, go out and play it, okay? It may have been 2 months too late, but go out and play it, either way. And the Batman Origins game, Arkham Origins, was another game I was looking forward to. I managed to speak my mind about it on the last episode of Super Tool Shed, but that would have been cool to talk about on Sage Reviews.
Here's the new home of Sage Reviews. Like, you want reviews? If you listened to Batting Average, which was the previous episode of Super Tool Shed, still on the front page, you can also view it right on the left there, or on the right in the sidebar, in the Super Tool Shed section. Yeah, we're tending to play the same games at roughly the same time, but this came about, I think that part of the catalyst for this, because I keep wanting to bring this up, because I don't want it to feel like Sage Reviews just terminated out of nowhere. Part of the termination of Sage Reviews comes to the fact that we like a lot of co-op games.
And whenever I'm playing a game to review, I'm on a schedule. And the sooner I can beat the game, the sooner I can talk about it and release a timely review. Excuse me. And the problem started to come in when I'm playing a co-op game with Mark, and we're hitting a snag, and I'm trying to power through it, and Mark is, you know, kind of getting jerked along with me,
taking in the scenery as I go. And if you want to know, like, if you want to know the full story of what happened, go back to Gears of Something Something, another episode of Super Tool Shed, where we tell the whole story about what happened that day.
Well, that was certainly a defining moment in our relationship. Not exactly the most positive one, but a positive outcome.
It was a signpost of, all right, something's got to give, because we want to play games. These reviews, even though they do good numbers, they're not doing the best numbers. You're not getting to enjoy the games. You're nitpicking at shit that doesn't need to be nitpicked at. Because my argument is always that the reason why it is that I don't want to do a review show of anything are numerous and varied. But the number one thing is the reason why it is that I personally don't want to do a review show. Because there have been a few people that have asked, like, does Mark do a review show? Where can I watch Mark's show? It's like, no, look, there is no Mark show. The Mark show is Super Tool Shed. Like, this is the Mark and Ben show, the Ben and Mark show, the Super Tool Shed show, the Super Shed show. And the reason why is because I can sit here and I can riff with Ben on a game all day, and we can come together on some things, and we can, you know, explode on other things and just fly in completely different directions. But there's no pressure for me to do that. This is just me sitting down shooting the shit with one of my best friends. If I had to complete, like, if I'm against the clock of everybody's reviewing this game right now, I need to get my unique opinion about this game, which isn't very unique, committed to paper and capture footage and do the VO and put it up, like, I would lose sight of why I'm gaming in the first place, which is that I'm trying to experience something. And you lose that when you're watching the clock. When you start punching the clock, you just lose that sense of experience, and then it's just, you know, it's every day is exactly the same.
Well, I wouldn't say that. Well, it would seem like every day was exactly the same if you were on a continuous schedule of games. And I will not lie, at a certain stretches during those 5 years, I certainly felt the rigmarole, and the games that I was reviewing did not help. I mean, does anyone really remember the first time they ever played Body Count? Or if they played, I'm just looking at my wall of games here at the moment. Yeah, Darkness 2 was forgettable.
But Fear I liked 3. It.
I mean, yeah, you liked it. You liked it. Definitely, Fear 3, you could throw that on the forgettable pile. Homefront was, other than the way they were treating the North Korean situation, that was an utterly forgettable shooter. And yeah, like, when you're playing games that are very forgettable back to back to back to back to back, week in and week out, then yeah, you could definitely get stuck in the rigmarole. But this kind of thought process kind of resonated with me while I was thinking about what we're going to talk about here on Super Tool Shed. And I wanted to talk about the games that left an impression on us from the last generation that no one really brings up in conversation anymore. I mean, everyone likes to talk about, like, Uncharted, or they like talking about Grand Theft Auto 4 or 5, but I'm talking about those games that they came during this very turbulent year of gaming, and then we remember playing them. Maybe they weren't the best games in the world, but they were definitely memorable. And but, you know, we have not heard hide nor hair of them since. And I think I'm going to start off with talking about a little RPG that I did not expect for me to like as much as I did. And that was an RPG called Nier. And it came out back in 2010. And it was, first off, it was unique to me because it was a Japanese developed game where they redeveloped it, they reskinned it for the American market. Therefore, there was two versions of the game. There's Nier Replicant, which is the Japanese version, and Nier Gestalt, which is the American version. And really, the main difference is the fact that the main hero in the Japanese version is like a teenager, late teens, young, thin dude. And the American version is a big, brawny, middle-aged man.
And they did eventually release both versions, which kind of smacked to me as cost prohibitive. Like, come on, guys, really?
Couldn't just, like, have, like, a DLC patch where, like, yeah, you could just play as the Nier Replicant Nier instead of the, actually, that character went nameless. But, well, actually, you could fill in the blank on that guy.
Like, how much did you love the game that you bought it on the, because what is it, it came out on the Xbox first?
No, it came out on both. PS3 and Xbox.
And then, like, how much do you love it that you gotta buy one version that only has one Nier, and then the other version which has the correct Nier,
or at least the originally developed Nier?
Yeah, like that's when I would look at it, I would just go, you know what? I've got friends that are telling me that this game is good, and I just no. I'm not gonna, and maybe that was a mistake in the long run, but
it was a mistake in the long run. It's very Zelda-like in gameplay, but without the Zelda baggage, I want to say.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's an action RPG. It's not exactly the deepest in the world, but it's definitely one of the most unique, and it presents itself in a way that I've never felt in my 5 years, in the past 5 years of reviewing games. And I wish that came off more in my review of it. But unfortunately, when the best things you have to say about a game are intangibles, like, you know, like the music's great, the boss fights are memorable, and it just doesn't exactly add up to a much too good of a review, as it were. And I wish the game was, I guess, designed better, because the side quest system really sucked. There was no trackback system. You couldn't, like, if you accepted a side quest from, like, an NPC, you had to remember where that NPC was if you finished it. First off, finished it, and then you had to return back for the reward. You had no idea where that NPC was. There was no, like, blip on a map or anything like that.
Definitely makes you feel the value of a town full of guys with exclamation points above their heads.
Oh, come on. I'm a WoW survivor, all right? I know that story in and out.
Well, just in keeping with that, although I don't know how it is you're really going to feel about it, because we discussed, like, what we're going to talk about before the show, but now that we're on air, it just kind of hit me. Darksiders. I know you weren't a huge fan of it.
Wait a minute. Darksiders, right?
Yeah, Darksiders, the one that was done by Joe Matarera.
Oh, yeah. I guess, you know, all the talk of Zelda-like certainly came to life when you mentioned Darksiders.
Yeah. See, the thing is that Darksiders initially got a bad rap. Like, it got fair to middling reviews, but it got a bad rap because, like, well, it takes elements from The Legend of Zelda. It takes elements from Devil May Cry. It takes elements from God of War. And when I heard all of those things, and the way that it ended up in my hands was my friend got frustrated in a boss fight, and he's like, you can have it for $40. I went, okay. But when I heard all of that, like Zelda, God of War, and Devil May Cry, I said, I don't see the problem. And the reason why is because you're talking to the guy that likes Nanobreaker.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're talking about, like, rip-off copycat games, we're coming from a generation where that was pretty much the norm. Like, everyone was copying Mario, and everyone was copying, Super Metroid. Yeah. So,
Everything was copy-paste. Like, those guys did it. We should do it, too. It'll at least make us enough money to keep the lights on. So, for me, like, clones, like, still to this day, clones aren't really a bad thing. And when you tell me that a game's got all of these elements from these games that I like, so long as they didn't say it plays like God of War 3, then I was fucking on board. And you know what? The voice acting was really solid. Liam O'Brien did his deadpan acting thing that he does so well.
Well, speaking of Liam O'Brien, Liam O'Brien also played a book in Nier, and I guess that kind of continues with the whole dark. How would you just thought about Darksiders?
Like he just makes games better. But he doesn't sound like he's trying all that hard. He almost sounds like he just shows up in the booth and he's like, "So what am I supposed to be doing right now?"
He's very okay. Malcolm McDowell in that way. He's very Malcolm McDowell in that way.
But the dude's awesome. So having him voice War was a really cool idea. Having Mark Hamill come in there as your kind of symbiote friend helper dude was really cool. But the gameplay was really solid, and the story, even though it was like totally fucking 90s Top Cow Image caliber writing, it was good enough. You know, fucking Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, fucking they rung the bell and the end of the world happened too early, and they blame War, and now he's got to clear his fucking name, and you know, like battles of devils and angels and conspiracy and all this other shit, like, and it all just kind of worked out. And then Darksiders 2 happened, and I stopped giving a shit. But I'll always have the original Darksiders, which was, it felt epic.
To me, it was like a weekend rental. It was definitely one of those games where it was competent, but there was nothing about the game that made me want to say, yeah, I definitely felt like my money was not wasted. I mean, if this was like a budget title, then maybe, but it, with the kind of pedigree it has, there was no way that was going to be a budget title. By the way, those side missions where you go into a different reality and fight monsters, I think, like, it was like a monster challenge that would pop up every once in a while. Those were bullshit, weren't they?
Well, some of the combat mechanics were a little bit bullshit. I'm not going to say that Darksiders had the tightest fucking combat system I've ever seen in its class. It doesn't have industry-leading combat mechanics, but, you know, everything works just about the way you thought it was supposed to work. You know, you got the fucking glaive from Dark Sector, you throw it, it comes back as a fucking boomerang. You get a gun that shoots a lot whenever it is that something falls out of the air, you can shoot it back into the air and keep it there until you stop firing. You know, like, everything worked the way it was supposed to fucking work, and platforming in that game was smooth. I'm not going to say it was perfect, but it was smooth, and the environments were good, and just I was pleasantly surprised by this game to the point where I feel comfortable naming it here as, at the very least, my first talking point.
Oh god, I'm so glad you name dropped Dark Sector. That was a game that I felt like, there's some games that you feel like never really deserve to exist. That was definitely Dark Sector for me, because that was just one of the most...
It established the rule of thumb. It's like, look, rule number one, if your idea is that the weapon comes out of your protagonist, that is some organic piece of shit, drop it and start over. Alright? Prototype.
Prototype. Although Dark Sector predates Prototype by several years.
I know, and that's what I'm saying, is that Dark Sector set the fucking trend. Like, if your character's main weapon comes out of their body, just stop. No. Just scrub it.
And if the extent of your powers is you throw a glaive, it gets electrocuted, and then you have to environmental puzzle your way through a level based entirely around that, then maybe you should just kind of drop that too.
Good. Yeah, like there is no mend and make do approach to this gameplay, all right? If we're talking about the organic weapon that's like, I am the living weapon. You know, like, and also, if your guy talks like that, scrub it.
Oh God, you know who's the guy who played Hayden Tenno? I have no idea why I still remember that character's name all these years. Hayden Tenno. That was like the weirdest name I've ever heard in a game. It was the same guy. He was literally the same guy who played Clark in Smallville.
Oh, what, Tom Welling?
Yeah, that was Tom Welling.
Oh, good.
I know. Jeez.
There's a career off the rails.
I know.
Like Superman curse. Didn't kill you, just your career.
Oh, God. He wasn't even in that that Superman internet video where it was
Daly and his kid and Dean Cain and Brandon Ralph. And I did ask that question. I was like, where's Tom Welling? Oh, yeah, that's right. He doesn't matter. He you don't get to be in the Superman club if you only wore the suit once for like 2 seconds.
Damn it. Fucking CW. You know, I watched that show for like the first season and then I just dropped it like a bad habit.
Yeah, I think any person in their right mind did the same thing. I sure as shit did. I watched the first season. I watched the episode that had Bart Allen, or what they were calling Bart Allen. And I thought it was cute at the time that he had a bunch of fake IDs and he's this wayward kid. And his fake IDs have like Barry Allen, Wally West, like names of actual Flashes on them. Like, oh, man, that's really cute. But then when they got to like Victor Stone, I went, you know what? No. Just no. Like, first off, don't parade around fucking the famous Jet Jackson and call him Victor Stone. Don't fucking do it.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. My apologies. It wasn't him who voiced Hayden Tenno. I got mixed up. You know who it was? Michael Rosenbaum.
Same show. Still Lex... counts.
Yeah, I know. That's why I got mixed up. It wasn't Superman who voiced him. It was Lex Luthor who voiced him.
Well, Rosenbaum's not doing all that great either, so screw it. All he has left on this planet is whenever Andrea Romano's like, hey, do you want to be the Flash again?
Yes! Please! I'm no Gene Hackman!
That's fine, man. He's my favorite Flash voice, hands down.
Well, another game that I felt kind of missed the train, as it were, was this kind of cements my position that if you're gonna name your game something, have it be a title that people can pronounce properly, and that was El Shaddai: Ascension of the Metatron. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. I mean, great game, very memorable game, very artistically inclined game, I remember what I said about that game in my review. I said it was the only game I would ever really truly call resplendent because the visuals in that game was so incredible. And that was only because of its art direction. And it was because it didn't rely so heavily on like high fidelity graphics or really realistic environments. It was relied on what, you know, like how...
It's the Miyamoto school of game design where Miyamoto used to say, I don't care about the hardware. I could make great games with stick figures because at the core of the game is a good story and good gameplay. It doesn't really matter what it looks like.
Well, I would argue that it does matter what it looks like, just not in the way that most AAA titles seem to think it does.
Where it's like ratchet the graphics and let's have mocap and let's do facial acting so that fucking Michael Ironside can't be Sam Fisher anymore.
I mean, I'll defend that decision too, because that could be used very effectively in like, say, a lot of Naughty Dog games. Naughty Dog is pioneering that trend, and along with Quantic Dream. And I like seeing that when it's used right, like here. Like I said, but when it's used to replace Michael Ironside as Sam Fisher, no, that is using your powers for evil, and you must be stopped.
Honestly, because how would you feel if John St. John got replaced as Duke
Big
Nukem?
The Cat?
Well, fuck off.
Actually, well, I wouldn't feel too bad about that because everyone could do the Duke Nukem voice. But it's the easiest voice.
But that's not the point. Is that if fucking Gearbox tomorrow where it's like, we're doing a new Duke Nukem and it's going to be facial motion capture and it's not going to look super cartoony anymore and we're going to reboot the Duke.
And they
decided to get like fucking full on mocap and like if they had just completely departed from their cartoony ass style that they do, where they're still like Gearbox is still pretty old school and more power to them for it. But if they said that and they had been like, and we're not going to have John St. John because John can't run and jump and climb trees on this big fucking soundstage with infrared lights and cameras. You have any idea how many people would be pissed? There would be a fucking riot. Every person with a MAGFest badge, at the very least, would fucking riot. Yeah.
Especially after what happened with Duke Nukem Forever, and especially what happened with Aliens Colonial Marines. I think everyone is just like, motherfucker, you better come out with Borderlands 3, or else you're a dead man walking.
Oh, yeah, because now they're coming out with the next episode of Borderlands, which means that we're going to be 2.5 DLCs removed from current Borderlands play. But there is that kind of feeling that's like, guys, you really need to hit it out of the park on this next one, or else they're going to burn your building down. Yeah. But, yeah, the Miyamoto school of thought was, you know, like stick figures. Like he thoroughly believes that it's not the graphics that make memorable gaming experiences. It's the execution of the game as a whole, as an experience, and that the visual is just kind of like the candy. You know, it's the Jimmies on top of your really awesome fucking sundae with the hot fudge.
Well, I would argue that it has its role. I mean, and every part of the experience plays its part, and I wouldn't diminish any one part from the game as a whole. Let's face it, some of our favorite games look really good. Can you honestly say, like, some of your favorite games, do they look like shit?
I mean, at the time, no, I guess Tiny Tank doesn't count. Tiny Tank didn't look great when it came out, but it looked good. Brave Fencer Musashi didn't look amazing, but it did the job. Like, The worst that I could ever say that has gotten for me in terms of my favorite games is that sometimes shit gets really utilitarian, but exactly. not wholesale bad.
Like, there's no, like, offensive color schemes. There's no, like, generic bland by the design. There's no lifelessness. There's art to the imagery, and that plays its role to the gaming experience. And when I absolutely hate it when people say, you shouldn't judge games by its visuals. It's like, motherfucker, you should judge a game by what it's attempting to do. And if it's trying to build a world on the visual spectrum, then yes, you should judge it for it. You should judge it for it.
Because we're talking about a visual medium.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, I understand if you're saying, like, if the game, like Flash games that are like, there's this Flash game called Shift where it's just all black and white. And that's the point of the gameplay, is so whenever you shift, black becomes white and that changes platforms and that changes.
But Limbo did the same thing.
Like, Limbo did the exact same thing. And then you say, well, it doesn't have enough colors, so it sucks. So yeah, you're an idiot for saying that, but don't like throw every single like piece of criticism of visual representation under the bus with such a blanket statement.
Which, I used to get in arguments about this a lot, about how guys would come up to me and it's like, look at these graphics, son, these graphics are so good. See, what we're talking about is the art in a visual medium. When someone's talking to you about how good the graphics are, they're talking about the hardware and what makes the graphics look good, what extends the toolkit of the visual medium. But they don't appreciate it. They're not saying that from a place of like, man, I really appreciate how like the depth of field that's being created. And, you know, maybe it's not our place to judge the type of person that is so short-sighted in their appraisal of a game that they're only talking about, you know, like, oh my God, look at all the hair follicles on this Madden football player guy. But it is to say that it's like, dude, please stop talking to me. that's really it.
But like, how a game visually defines itself, whether it's through incredibly lifelike graphics or memorable memorable environments or memorable level design. That's important to the gaming experience. And nowhere, I feel, through all the games I've ever reviewed, was that more important, or at least presented as such, than El Shaddai. Because, you know, if you ask me point blank what was so good about it as a game, I can't really say too much about it. It was sort of a puzzle. It was a platforming action game where you devil may cry your way through a bunch of unique-looking enemies. But there really wasn't much variety to it. Like, the main draw of its combat was that you could steal your opponent's weapons and then use them against them. And certain weapons were better against certain enemy types. And that was sort of the give and take of the combat. That was just like them throwing you a bone as far as tactics are concerned. But it wasn't anything that was too memorable. Functional, but not earth-shattering. And if the game just looked like every other game, then I wouldn't remember that game in the slightest. But I'll always remember that game because of how it decided to build its world. This sort of semi-post-apocalyptic, semi-ethereal, semi-metaphysical landscape that the game is set in. And also for some reason, the angel, the main character, I forgot the main character's name, has on jeans and no shirt, but he also has angelic armor. Just like this white ceramic armor that gets broken off every time you take a hit.
Somebody watched too much Dogma.
Maybe a little bit too much, yeah.
So I think that would bring me to the next game, which is kind of hard to pick because the list is so fucking long. I want to say Enslaved, but I'm not going to say Enslaved, even though if you haven't played Enslaved is dirt fucking cheap. Go and play it. If you like Dragon Ball, and I mean original Dragon Ball, then you have no reason to not play Enslaved. Especially since Andy Serkis just holds it down in that game in a way that boggles the mind. Because Andy Serkis is Ninja Theory's ace in the fucking hole. I want to say No More Heroes.
Well, No More Heroes, I would argue, at least still has its cult following. You know what I mean?
Like, and the reason why is because it was fun.
I mean, it was fun, but...
It was fun, it was visceral, it was goofy, it didn't take itself seriously. It's got the seal of approval that is Suda51, and it had a visual style that just worked.
But I wouldn't call that a game that, like, you know, it's gone and done and it's over with. People are still clamoring for a sequel.
Oh, yeah, people are still clamoring for a sequel, which will never fucking happen. Well, maybe it'll never happen, but God knows at this point with Suda51, where it's like, hey, here's this game by Suda51. It's like, you mean this game by James Gunn? that Suda51 came in one day, looked at it, and said, all right. Now, Metroid Prime 3 definitely hit all the right buttons for me. Because I'm a Metroid Prime fan. I really enjoyed that trilogy of games. Metroid Prime 2 was way too fucking hard and really fucking scary. It was scary because it was hard. But Metroid Prime 3 just kind of threw everything out the fucking window. Losing all of your equipment at the beginning of the game. No, we're not going to do that this time. We're not going to do that this time because we feel really bad about Metroid Prime 2. And, they really sold you this idea that Samus was losing. Mm-hmm. And you never really felt that before. Like, you felt disadvantaged, you know, as the singular good bounty hunter in all the galaxy. the chick in the hard suit that can't be put down. But you never felt like you were losing. And in Metroid Prime 3, I mean, it was big, it was epic, it was sprawling, it was a really good adventure, but you just kind of felt like you were losing the entire fucking time. Because, you know, things happen that never happen in Metroid games. Like, normally it's get 100% or get 70 to 100%. You see Samus without her armor on, you see her face, whatever. But in this game, at one point, she takes her helmet off and she pukes Phazon after a boss fight because she's dying. that the very ideas behind Metroid Prime and Metroid Fusion I always really liked, because Metroid Prime was a much more personal game because it puts you inside the suit, and Metroid Fusion kind of put you in this position where it says near, like, it almost says explicitly, every decision you've ever made as this character was wrong, in the sense that, you know, like, you know, maybe you shouldn't have unbalanced an entire fucking ecosystem and wiped out every single Metroid, because the Metroids were the natural predator of something, and now they want to kill you. So, oh yeah, and here's the high irony. Now you're the last Metroid. Enjoy that. But Metroid Prime was so personal, and Metroid Prime 3 even more so, because they made Samus very vulnerable. Because as she was suffering from this Phazon poisoning / corruption, you know, like, she takes her helmet off, she fucking pukes Phazon, she's, you know, she's got these ridiculous powers, but what's the cost? You know, like, is the mission really worth all this? And there were points when, because you always had that nice blowback feature where if you would let go of the charge beam near a surface, then you could see her face and her eyes moving around. And as the game would progress, you would notice that she would get these blue glowing veins on her face and her eyes would change color. It was really, really something to watch this character. Like, you're watching her die in first person. And, you know, everything works itself out at the end, and then Super Metroid happens. But still, it just felt so interesting and so good and so personal, like, because it's such a quiet journey, Metroid Prime. With the other Metroid games, you've got, you know, you got music and you got enemies and you got, you know, all the things, like, all the things that hold a game up that kind of engross you into the world. But Metroid Prime as a trilogy is very lonely.
I'm not too familiar with the Prime games, so I, you know, chalked it up for not growing up with a GameCube in the house. So, but I think I want to close out this part of the episode by just kind of rattling off my final thoughts on some of the non-starters of the last generation, like the games that came out and just kind of came out with a thud. 007 Legends. Fuck you. 007 Legends, fuck you so hard, so long, and repeated amounts of times. How dare you shit on my GoldenEye memories by trying to bring it back with... I hate that game so much.
Can I just say that it's really kind of weird and sad that the last good thing that had the James Bond name on it was GoldenEye Rogue Agent?
And you're kind of stretching the definition of good on that one.
You didn't think Rogue Agent was good?
I felt it was passable. I mean, you know, the bar was set pretty low by then, but...
I thought Rogue Agent was good, if only because it's a Bond game, not about Bond.
Yeah, I mean, that was
It was outside the box thinking. You know, the idea of, like, why don't we follow around... Like, we always show Bond villains perfectly formed, and here's Goldfinger, and here's Dr. No, and they've already got shit all together. You know, like, here's Scaramanga, and he's, you know, like, he will fuck your shit. But we don't see, you know, the journey of what turns fucking Christopher Lee into Scaramanga at all. So the idea of this game that follows around the rise of a Bond villain, and not only a Bond villain, the villain who killed Bond, in quotations, I thought that was really kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you're heavy into the Bond mythos, then that was kind of a treat. But I'm looking at strictly from a game perspective. I mean, realizing that, like, the heights that the series had reached back in the Nintendo 64 days, and then to see it kind of tumble the way down, and then finally ending on that piece of shit, 007 Legends. God fucking damn it. If I had wound up reviewing that game, easily would have made my top 10. God damn, that game sucked dick. Okay, we're looking down my shelf here. Want to make sure that... Okay, Brink. I got this game to review during the time when the PSN network got hacked. So, like, there was no PSN for, like, 2-3 weeks, I want to say. So I was stuck trying to play Brink with the AI, and trying to play Brink using AI is like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube by swallowing it and shitting it solved. Just a lot of hours of discomfort.
It was too complicated for its own good.
Yeah, way too complicated for its own good.
It was too much at once. It was the sudden love of parkour as a martial art. It was because it came at a time when everybody was like, oh, fucking parkour! And we're still kind of like, oh, fucking parkour! You know, real-life superheroics. But when I played it, I was just like, this is... Why? You know, like why do I have to do all this? Why can't I just prone? Why can't I just cover? Why do I gotta fucking run? Like, I have a run button, I have a sprint button, I have, you know, a flip over this shit button. You know, like half of the time you spend playing Brink, you're flipping over shit and getting shot. So it just didn't make fucking sense. You know, it took every good thing about Mirror's Edge and then decided that... this game decided that the best part of Mirror's Edge was the last hour of Mirror's Edge.
Oh, God. I couldn't even get myself to... You know, my Mirror's Edge review was one of those reviews where I kind of had to bite my own frustration for it. It's like, outside of the frustration and the fact that the game kind of handcuffs you whenever they put a gun in your hand, it's like, all right... If you're going to put me at a disadvantage for putting a gun in my hand, how about you give me an option to not put a gun in my hand? Like, there's these segments where you have to get into a gunfight, and the gameplay just...
And the funny thing is that there's an achievement called Pacifist, where you can have the gun in your hand, but you can still melee the shit out of people in a gunfight, and if you get through the entire game without firing a single bullet, they give you this achievement, and it's like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. You won't let like me drop the gun, seriously, but you give me this achievement?
You are like, I like to meet the man who got that achievement. He's like, you, sir, must have no life. Congratulations.
Mm.
Ghostbusters the video game. Another game that I got but never reviewed. Why? Because that was the only time where the footage I recovered from my hours upon hours of playing was... unusable. So, never made a review of it. And that's another game that, you know, everyone was like, yes, Ghostbusters, yes! And then we got it, and it's like, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it just didn't live up to that first 2 minutes of gameplay that was completely, you know, unlicensed. That Unreal Engine gameplay that you saw and you looked at it and you went, wow, that's amazing. I'd pay to play that game. And for all the shit it got, when it finally came out, you went, that happened.
It was also way too easy. Like, you can't die. Yeah. I think that should be an achievement. Manage to die in Ghostbusters.
But it had all the good intentions in the world, but it just didn't need to happen.
It didn't need to happen, and it was, if I can be kind of honest here, it felt a little too Gears of War for me. That over-the-shoulder, clunky, running through the environment kind of feel.
Honestly, though, it wouldn't have worked in first person.
It wouldn't have worked in first person, but I just wish the controls didn't feel like I'm playing Gears of War, considering how much I hate playing Gears of War.
I know.
God damn it. Must the camera shake so violently every time you have to run into cover? Must it? No, it must not. So why are you handcuffing me with this fucking bullshit?
Just to piss you off.
I know, God. Rage. From, that was a fucking non-starter of a game, now, wasn't it?
Mm.
First game from id Software since Doom 3. And what is it? It's basically Borderlands 2 without the multiplayer.
Yeah, I had no interest. And it's not from, you know, some hard set beliefs. It's like, it's Doom, Quake, or nothing. It just kind of didn't look interesting. You know, like, there are a lot of people right now that are saying that, like, you know, zombies are dead. You know what? You're right. Zombies are dead. They're completely played. They are 100% uninteresting. And for me, and for a lot of people, an increasing amount of people, the apocalypse is growing uninteresting. Which makes it all the more weirder that they're going to do Mad Max as an open world game, but you still kind of feel attached to Mad Max for whatever your reasons.
I certainly do feel an attachment for Mad Max, if only because it, I think it was the stepping stone that the Wasteland narrative needed.
So we still have Mad Max, and you know what? There might be something to Mad Max, but generally speaking, walking around between Rage and Fallout and what the fuck else was there? Dead Rising.
Although that's sort of like a zombie wasteland narrative, not...
Yeah, not strictly like, you know, the bomb went off. Mm-hmm. But still, like all of these things where the world stopped turning, I'm tired. Which might be why it is that Watch Dogs seems so interesting to people, is because it's getting away from, you know, we set off the bomb, and getting more into a narrative that is that's more relevant to people right now, which is the idea that Big Brother's watching, we're all fucking wired into the system, and what happens if a dude decides that he wants to go off the grid and use the grid against the people who run said grid. So
it's definitely, Watch Dogs is definitely one of those games that I've got my finger to the pulse on. I'm not too sold on it because this is fucking Ubisoft, and these are the kinds of fucks that basically stated in no uncertain terms that they're not interested in a game if they can't make a franchise off it. So I'm looking at Watch Dogs and I'm saying this could be the start of a very bad thing. And they have already on my last good graces with that fucking Assassin's Creed.
But Rage just exactly bored the crap out of me aesthetically. Before anything else, I was like, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in looking at mutants with screws in their heads and guys wearing dusters and fucking leather-wrapped shotguns and blunderbusses and what the fuck else ever. I'm done. I'm fucking done with this whole thing. I'm done with this. I'm done with zombies. The fact is that the money train is grinding to a fucking halt on the apocalypse. All right? Can we get back to fun? Or can we get back to the world turning, looking normal, people living their lives in a way that's not like,
before the bomb went off, I used to have two whole legs.
You know, like that's like, it was cute. It was cute when it started, but it's overstayed its welcome.
You know what? One thing I've always wanted to see in game, but I've never seen it pulled off, or at least pulled off successfully, truly alone, like a wasteland game, but you're the only one.
Oh, you want a game based on the Omega Man?
Yeah, based on like Omega Man, like you are the last man. It's just you against everything. You got no allies. You got no support. It's just you and your wits.
See, that would be interesting, although some people would argue that that's DayZ, because it's you against the fucking world because you can't trust fucking anybody.
Well, it's not because you can't trust anybody. There is nothing to trust.
Because you obviously can't trust the fucking mobs, and anytime you run into another player, it's like, hey, how you doing, dead? So... But yeah, well, like a game based on the Omega Man would be a really daring venture, to say the very least, because like they plop you into the world and they'd be like, look, they're all gone. Everybody's gone. You're the last man. Especially if they did it like something like Silent Hill the Room. Not mm-hmm. bad like Silent Hill the Room, but do it in the sense where like the real fucking Omega Man, where it's like you're just in this fucking room and you're trying to defend the house.
It's the idea that you yourself you're fucked, but you keep fighting because what choice do you have?
Yep. You don't want to lay down and die. Like, they're the monsters, you're the human. But then, of course, you know, like, not to spoil the Omega Man or anything, but, like, first off, fucking, if you know anything, you know that I Am Legend was loosely based on the Omega Man, so... But in the Charlton Heston Omega Man, it's like, and even before that, because Charlton Heston's Omega Man was like the second one, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first one was, God, Vincent Price.
The twist is that society rebooted itself. Like all the vampires that Will Smith was dusting left and right and that were all voiced by Mr. Faith No More.
Yeah, they've formed their own society, and they're the ones that have taken over the Earth. And now you are the threat against them.
Like, you're the monster. Like, they actively either are trying to destroy you in the house, or they're just like, we don't go in there. You know, like, they tell stories about you, this guy, who's this crazy fucking monster who lives in this house and just kills without any justifiable cause. And that would be really fucking weird to, like, go through, like, 10, 20 hours of that.
Mm-hmm. Or, I always had this thought of, what if humanity ended not because of, like, some great threat, but because of something, because of desperation, like, of another race's desperation. Like, if aliens came, then they torched all of humanity just to plunder our resources. Because they live on a dying planet and they got no other choice.
Like, imagine Independence Day without Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum.
Mm-hmm.
Aliens would have won. We would have got wiped out.
We got wiped out. But for some reason or another, you don't know what happened. Because this isn't like armies and armies of invasion. It's just like a platoon of aliens who had one mega weapon that could kill all of humanity, except for you for some reason. And you don't know why.
And then you have to spend the rest of the game trying to figure that out while they're sending increasingly more and more dudes to come after you because, like, the planet's supposed to be empty.
The planet's supposed to be empty? What the fuck is this guy doing here? And the best part is that since they're so desperate, there's not a lot of aliens to send after you. They are, like, a dying people.
And it would be, like, really weird if you go through the game thinking that they're, like, holding them in, like, death camps and shit. But then at the very end of the game, you realize that you're the last man.
You're the last man. And then, like, the revelation is, if human life and human history could be blinked out of existence so easily, then, you know, what choice do you have but to continue living on to try and keep this very flickering flame alive for as long as you can?
Before you're the last man and you die and then humanity dies with you. Because it would be a very good moral choice game. Because, you know, what would a man do first? Like, because it's in level. So first, it's what would a man do to save his race, thinking that they're alive? Then what would a man do to survive as the last remnant of humanity? And then what would that man do over a long period of time, realizing that when he dies, the book closes? Does he take revenge?
Does he take revenge? What's the point of revenge if he's just going to die anyway?
You know,
he'll live forever.
No, but he's a man with nothing to lose at that point. He lost his friends. He lost his family. He lost every single person that he shared a heartbeat with. And now it's just like, you know what? That's it. And he fucking steals a ship and he goes after him. And he just becomes the fucking Terminator for like 2 seconds and then they kill him and then it's over.
I think that makes a great point for a game. That, I mean, I think if we're going ahead with this wasteland narrative that I think The Last of Us breathed new life into, because they realized that the true appeal of stories like that is the human drama and the human element in a situation like this.
Yeah, but even that's gonna get tired after a while. Because it started with Walking Dead. Well, no, it started with Romero. Romero saying that, you know, like, that the zombies are just doing what they do. It's human beings that are the monsters. But then, you know, that torch kind of gets passed along to Walking Dead and, you know, like, fight the dead, fear the living, that being their tagline. And Last of Us then kind of taking the torch into the games and more, you know, fight the infected, fear the living.
Fight the infected, fear the living. But I think the Last of Us had more hope than either one of them. Like, 20 years after the epidemic hit, and then there's communities of people living relatively good lives. Hope still lives on. It's like, and then, like, Joel asks his brother who runs the camp, it's like, you fight infected? Who doesn't? But we're living a good life. We may not have the life we had 20 years ago, but it's a life that's worth living.
We've got water, we've got food, and we've got each other, so.
We got water, we got food, we got electricity. Hell, we got a projector that we can show old movies to kids. It's like, you know what? You're right. That is a good life, all things considered. I mean, even at what point do you say, like, we can't get the life we had left, so we better make a good life with what we have?
Although, we have to remember that in the real world, it is totally not people who think like that that fucking set up their doomsday bunkers.
Nope. The people who set up those doomsday bunkers are the people that would shoot on sight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a good place to take us out on. Mark, do your business.
Do my business.
No. Don't do your business. Do your bidness.
Do my business. All right. Outro music, as always, provided by Zero Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Zerjester. That's X-E-R Jester. You can now take Super Tool Shed wherever you go. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Till next we beat, the shed is shut.